What fascinates you about Colts, and how did you make that, you know, kind of like the basis for this game?
I guess I've been fascinated by sort of alternate societies or groups that live within society but have their own set of rules and their own way of living and sort of feel themselves as, you know, part but separate. So I found that really interesting. I'm also, you know, fascinated by how people interpret religion or maybe interpret the same passage of the Bible in totally different ways depending on who they are and how people can use religion both for good and for bad. And I thought, you know, that sort of spurred my interest in cults in general. And then as I would read up on them, it was interesting to find out how idealistic so many of the cult members are and how they're really trying to make a better world or trying to improve their own lives or whatever it is. They think this is their great work, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, that works out. It goes really well. Sometimes not so much. So it was really interesting to look at these different situations of how cults play out and how these sort of separate groups that maybe go live in a commune or something play out differently in different situations. And as a result, I thought it'd be a really interesting thing to explore in a game where you could actually look at it from multiple different sides.
So let's talk about how you create a action infiltration game. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard that term before, and I just think it's really cool how you use a unique camera and the changing story. So how did you go about designing the gameplay elements at play in Church of Darkness?
Sure. I mean, for me, being on this project, having a smaller budget and an indie team, I didn't want to try to compete head-on with, like, a first-person experience or a close-in third-person experience or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, what's a different camera perspective that we don't see a lot in games today? And there was a game I loved as a kid that was the original Castle Wolfenstein on the Apple II in the early 80s, was a game where you were infiltrating a castle, but it had a top-down perspective, and you were sort of going room to room, taking out guards and trying to get farther and farther into the castle to find Hitler, if I recall correctly, or mm-hmm. maybe it was the second game you find Hitler. Anyway. So I thought, hey, I haven't seen that perspective done in a while. And sort of a lot of indie games have done side scrollers, you know, or they've done, you know, other older game styles and cameras you haven't seen in a while, but not so many have done this sort of top down. And I find it's uniquely suited to sort of what I call action infiltration gameplay, where you're, you know, able to get more tactical awareness of who's around you and where they are and then play in order to avoid them, or play in order to sneak up on them or whatever it is. And I enjoy that type of gameplay in something like Far Cry or Dishonored as well. But here it just gives you sort of a different perspective on it. And it allows you to have maybe a faster paced version of one of those games where because you can see more of the world, you can really blaze through some of these spaces if once you get into the groove of the game.
So how did you guys get Ellen McLean and John Patrick Lowry to do the voice acting? Because, I mean, I think that adds a very special element to the game.
Right. Yeah, no, they're fantastic to work with and great to have. And John actually was in the Suffering games. Mm-hmm. So going back to making the Suffering games in the mid-2000s in Seattle, John was just one of the actors who auditioned, and we hadn't met him before. And he'd done a few other games, like I think he might have done the first No One Lives Forever or something at that point. But he was, you know, super versatile actor who I loved and I worked with really well. And when I was thinking about this cult game, I was always thinking, hey, I should get John to do it because I'm in Seattle, he's in Seattle. And I knew he had the range and the sort of persona to pull that off. Mm-hmm. And originally when I was thinking of the game, I was thinking, okay, cult leader, great. And then I was thinking, I don't want to just have one cult leader because in the game you hear the leader talking over the PA system all the time, mm-hmm. sort of sharing their dogma and views and also, you know, how the camp is running and all this stuff. And if it was just John as the cult leader, it would have been, oh, you're just hearing his voice all the time. And that could be cool, but I thought it'd be cooler if there were two and they could play off of each other a little bit. And then naturally I started thinking, well, husband and wife, that makes sense because often these groups are led by, you know, someone who's a couple and their spouse is their, you know, right-hand person and it helps them tremendously. And I thought, well, that'd be cool if there were two leaders and they were both charismatic preachers. You particularly see that in a lot of sort of charismatic churches today is that they'll have woman preachers who are right there alongside their husband and they do some of the sermons and their husbands do some of the sermons. So that was really interesting way to sort of expand what you were hearing in the game. And then I thought, well, hey, John, I knew that John was married to Ellen, and I knew she was a fantastic actress from mm-hmm. her work on Portal, obviously. So I thought, hey, John, what do you think? Do you think Ellen would be up for this? You know, first I pitched the game to him. I talked to him about it almost before I talked to anybody else. And he was like, sure, that sounds great. And I said, do you think Ellen would be up for it too? And he's like, of course she would. And he's like, wait, no, I should ask her first. but he did, and she was up for it. And they've been great ever since. So really, it goes back to, you know, having worked with John before and them being, you know, a couple that's really good at working together.
Old great games really kind of like disrupt the industry, disrupt the marketplace, give people more options. The Suffering did this. So The Church in the Darkness, how do you want that to disrupt the marketplace? What are your goals for this game once it's released?
I don't really think of it as disrupting, but I mean, I guess you could think of it that way. But the thing for me is that, you know, I looking at games that have come out over the last, you know, 30 years, I'm always surprised that there aren't more that are doing interesting things with dynamic narrative, mm-hmm. And having a narrative that changes every time you play or reacts to what you're doing or does, you know, more complex things. And there have been a bunch of games that do that in sort of research spaces, but fewer that are doing it, you know, in a sort of commercial sense. And there have been a few exceptions to that. Like I like to point out the Shadow of Mordor Nemesis system is basically a dynamic narrative system where it's shaping what you do in the world and turning it into a little unique story. So I think there's movement in that direction. But I was just fascinated by this idea of having a game that fulfills some of the requirements of being a roguelike, but also has a narrative that's changing every time in addition to the rest of the game changing every time. So I thought, this would be a really cool thing to do in the game and no one else would do it. And I mean, it's certainly, I always like to do something unique with a game, mm-hmm. when I'm working on it, but I don't think of it necessarily as, hey, I'm going to go change the industry with this game. But maybe in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, hey, this is a first step to doing something different with dynamic narrative. And maybe other teams will pick up on what I do and then take it and do something new with it from there. So, we'll see if that actually happens. There's certainly lots of games that come out and do really interesting things and then no one copies them and they just get forgotten. So who knows what'll actually happen, but, you know, I hope it lets people think about different things you can do with dynamic narrative.
So what's your pitch to gamers? Like if you had to tell them why they have to try this game, what do you think you'd say to them?
Well, I think the core of it is really the setting that's going to set it apart, is that you haven't, and that's the thing I hear from so many people when they see it is, wow, I've never seen a game in this setting before. I wonder why not. So I feel like, you know, setting a game in a cult back in, you know, the 1970s, is really different and unique. And hooks a lot of people that way. And then when I say, oh, and by the way, the nature of the cult changes every time you play and you need to figure out what the nature of the cult is this time, then they're like, well, I've never seen that before. So those are the things that tend to grab people. I do also think that people who are into top down, you know, action, stealth, action infiltration type of games, sort of like old Metal Gear, I often bring up as a comparison. That's not an audience that is being served particularly right now either. Like there aren't many games that are doing top down stealth stuff. Like maybe you have Monaco would be a good example. A few others, but you know, and marrying it with narrative in this way isn't something you've seen a lot as well. So I hope somewhere in that cocktail of features and ideas, players are going to find something to latch onto. But I'm also honest that, you know, I don't think it's a game for everybody necessarily. It's not, that's sort of the advantage of being an indie, is you don't have to make the game that's gonna, like a Halo 5 or something that has to sell 10 million copies and just appeal to almost everyone who has an Xbox. you know, here we can make something that, you know, is a little more extreme in what it's portraying and a little darker and a little weirder. But not everybody has to like it in the end of the day. But, you know, hopefully a bunch do.
In preparation for this interview, you know, I you know, obviously did my rounds on Google and whatnot, and I came across your initial post on the official PlayStation blog, and you know, the sentiment from the people responding was great. Everyone was really interested in the game and they were getting excited, but there was this one guy that was saying it was Bernie Sanders, like, propaganda, anti-Bernie Sanders propaganda. Like, how did you feel when you read that? Like, what was, and yeah, you handled it with class.
But when I showed the game to some friends shortly before we announced it, some of them brought that up because, you know, we're in the middle of an election cycle and they're like, oh, are you saying socialism's bad? This is not a good time to say socialism's bad because we think Bernie's great. And I said, well, the game's not really saying socialism's bad. The game is saying these people are socialists and sometimes they're bad and sometimes they're good, which is sort of the interesting thing about – certainly there have been lots of cases where socialism or more often communism is abused by dictators and leads to horrible situations for the people living in those countries. And I'm not in any way denying that ever happened. But there are other cases where, you know, you can look at some Western European countries that have, you know, democratic socialistic systems that have a lot of things that people in this country would call dangerous and socialist that actually have pretty high standard of living and have a lot of happy people living there and are still democracies. So anyway, I wanted to show, like, hey, you know, this can be used multiple different ways. And I thought it was interesting that because we are in the midst of the election cycle, people were reacting that way. Mm. I don't think that's going to be the case when we ship next year because, sure, you know, it'll be less topical to an election that's coming up. But it was, yeah, it was definitely not something I expected. It's just like, you know, when I have religious friends or something who maybe would be initially concerned about the game, as soon as they hear the pitch, they say, oh, so you're not saying, you know, all religion is bad or, you know, Christianity is bad or something like that. And I'm certainly not. But just saying, hey, sometimes people take religion and use it like this. So, just trying, I expected that reaction to it, that mm-hmm. I'd have to explain that to those people. I expected less of it from sort of fans of socialism. But just when I talk to those people and just say, hey, the game's about the gray areas and how it can be tricky and how it's maybe not clear what's going on. And when they understand that, they, you know, they come around. And I remember that guy on the PlayStation thread when I posted following up to him and said, hey, it's not like that. I'm trying to do something nuanced and with gray areas here. He was like, okay, cool. I'll check out the game.
Yeah.
So that was a really good online experience in the end.
So let's talk about how the story changes every time you play, because I think that's probably the coolest gameplay element, you know, present in the game. How difficult is that to create a system like that for the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the midst of working on a bunch of it right now, so it's definitely non-trivial. You know, it's almost for us, creating the content is the challenging part, creating lines of dialogue that can work in multiple situations mm-hmm. and then some lines of dialogue that change in some situations. And then how do those things fit together and not contradict each other? And how do you sort of architect like the characters of Isaac and Rebecca Walker to be in this? Well, I can see these people going either way. And then when they do break that way, it doesn't feel like it invalidates something else that the player saw earlier. So that's the thing we're really being careful about. And then coming up with systems that can allow us to author the content and implement it in a way where you're getting an experience that feels cohesive and has all these branches represented without them feeling like totally separate pieces of content everywhere.
Okay, great. Is there anything else that you want to say about the game that we haven't touched upon yet?
You know, yeah, I guess the last thing I'd like to say is, you know, so often when, and part of the reason I think this sort of dynamic narrative with the shifting character personalities is cool, so often when people play games where they get to make choices that lead to different endings, the first time you play the game, you really think of it as, now I'm making the choices I want to make. Like, I'm, you know, if I want to be a good character, I'm doing that. If I want to be, you know, more Han Solo dastardly guy or something, I'm doing that. But whatever the choices are, you're making those choices. And then if you're a big fan, you want to replay the game, you go back and make the opposite of the choices you want to make.
Yeah.
So inherently, the second time through the game is less fun, right? It's now I'm doing I want to see the rest of the content. That's cool, but I've got to do stuff I don't want to do. Here, the actual context of the game is changing each time. So, like, whether this, you know, the leaders of the cult are dangerous and apocalyptic, or whether they're just eccentric hippies who want to live a separate life in the woods, that is fundamentally changing. So the decisions you need to make in relation to these cult leaders are fundamentally changing. So you're not just making the choices you don't want to make. You're making different choices because the fundamental situation has changed. So hopefully that encourages people to want to go back and replay it and see some of the different permutations. Plus it's, you know, it's a roguelike with permadeath, so they're going to have to play it a bunch of times anyway.